Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Good evening and welcome to Amplify, a telephone talk show that looks at life from a religious perspective. I'm Father Ron Langwin, hoping that you have felt the warmth of God's love in your life this day, but especially the joy you feel when you share that love with others. As we do each week, I like to begin our program, kind of a platform for the discussion of the evening, by telling a story that is based on faith and formed with imagination. Jesus seemed to be lost in thought as he slowly walked along a path with his beloved friend and disciple, John. John said, "Master, you've been silent for such a long time. Why don't you sit and rest for a while? Your body must be weak because you haven't eaten anything all day." Jesus looked at John and said, "You are truly a kind man to worry about me so much, but I'm fine." "But Master," John objected mildly, "doesn't the Father want us to take care of our body?" Jesus tried to hold back a smile, but he failed. It was a small, knowing smile. He said, "John, I guess I have broken one of my Father's rules." John began to laugh and said, "Master, I have no right to speak to you in this manner. It is you who should be telling me what's right and what's wrong. But I care so much for you and worry about you." Jesus said, "I tell you this, John. Man must take care of his body. It is a gift for which he is responsible. Whatever limitations it may contain, it is still a gift from the Father. Life is a precious gift. Each seed contains living energy, a soul from the Father. And so man must not abuse the body, but care for it. But he must not become so concerned about it that his love for God, his family, and his neighbor are diminished." John smiled larger than ever and said, "Well, Master, if that's true, then we better rest a little longer and eat a little more bread." Jesus smiled back and said, "You are right, John. There are good reasons to fast and good reasons to eat." A story of faith and imagination. Our guest this evening writes in the introduction to his latest of many books titled You Are That Temple, A Catholic Guide to Health and Happiness. Guest I'm glad to have back. He's one of my favorites over the years. And he begins the introduction with a quote from 1 Corinthians. "Do you not know that you are God's temple and that God's Spirit dwells in you? If anyone destroys God's temple, God will destroy him. For God's temple is holy, and that temple you are." And then he writes in the passage above from his first letter to the Corinthians, St. Paul could hardly have said it more clearly, that you are the temple of the Holy Spirit. And yet he reemphasizes and elaborates on the point three chapters later. "Do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit within you, which you have from God? You are not on your own. You were bought with a price. So glorify God in your body." That closes the quote. And he writes, note well that in this passage he elaborates four essential points. Number one, your body is the temple. Holiness resides not only in the human soul. Your body and soul are gifts from God and are not your own. Who among us gave ourselves our own body or soul? A price was paid for you in body and soul. It is thanks to Christ's passion, death, and resurrection that you may one day enjoy eternal life in both body and soul. Therefore, we should glorify God through our bodies. We should show our gratitude and magnify God's glory through how we honor and use the bodies that house and manifest God's Holy Spirit. The first three points refer to tenets of the faith that we need to know, and the last point refers to what we need to do about them. That last is primarily what this book is about, a how-to book of sorts on how to glorify God in our bodies. If we are to glorify God in our bodies, we must avoid the corporal sins that directly dishonor the body, and we must avoid using our bodies as vehicles to carry out actions prompted by spiritual sins. The sins most directly relevant to our theme in this book will be gluttony and sloth. Indeed, many consider them the fundamental causes of so many widespread physical health problems around the world today. But we will be very careful, or we will very carefully consider in just what sense they may or may not be the two deadly, and that's what he writes, culprits. And our guest, who I've already said has been with us many times, is Kevin Vost. He obtained his Doctor of Psychology and Clinical Psychology from Adler University in Chicago, with internship and dissertation research at Southern Illinois University School of Medicine, Alzheimer's Center, Memory and Aging Clinic. And Dr. Vost has taught psychology and gerontology at Aquinas College in Nashville. He has served as a research review member for American Mensa and an advisory board member for the International Association of Resistance Trainers. And he is the author of more than 20 Catholic books, and his hobbies include lifting big weights and reading big books, such as those of St. Thomas Aquinas. He resides with his wife and their dog in Springfield, Illinois. Dr. Kevin Vost, welcome to Amplify.
Well, thanks so much for having me back on again, Father. It's always a real pleasure for me. And I wanted to tell you, too, I very much enjoyed your opening story of faith and imagination of Jesus and his beloved disciple John and the proper care for the body. That really set the tone.
Okay. There we
yes,
go.
Hello?
Yes. No, that was me. It was you were coming across loudly, and I turned down the wrong pot. That's what happens. That happens in life as you get a little bit older. But
I'm beginning to understand that, Father.
Well,
yeah.
you're far from me. Tell us a little bit about your background that qualifies you to write a book about health and holiness, because you are a doctor, and people might misunderstand that, Kevin Vost. But in doing that, I think you're going to reveal a lot about yourself.
Oh, well, sure. In this particular book, I focus in on three areas that kind of gave me some background in which to address these health issues in terms of both bodily and mental health. Yeah, I'm not a medical doctor or pharmacist or nurse or a dentist or anything like that, but I did get a doctorate in clinical psychology, and my specialty was in neuropsychology, brain-behavior relationships, and my dissertation and internship were done at a medical school's Alzheimer's Center. So I was very focused on what can happen to our cognitive functioning towards the end of our lives and if we have certain diseases. And through my psychological training, then it gave me, some some expertise in how to interpret social science research, how to conduct experiments and things like that. I taught for years part-time in doing college courses, primarily developmental psychology, lifespan human development, the psychology of adolescence, and the psychology of aging. So I've always had an interest in, you know, what goes on within a human person, body and soul, at different stages in the lifespan. So that first area there was that my focus in psychology, specifically neuropsychology. The second, since I was a young child, I've always just been fascinated with the world of weightlifting and strength training. So I note that I had my dad get me a barbell when I was in the second grade when I saw a weightlifter on TV. And I've been training pretty consistently since the seventh grade, which I think is about 1973. And then later I had competed in some bodybuilding and weightlifting and powerlifting and in various strength sports. So I've always been deeply involved in that. And also I had worked as a weightlifting instructor. I'd written articles for Muscle and Exercise magazine. So that was that second component, my own interest in the health and fitness world. And then the third, and I note that I have written about exercise in other books before, but this is the only time I brought a third area of my background into play, and that is my full-time career from 1984 to 2016 was doing mental and physical disability claims for the Social Security Administration on both children and adults. So I was reading, you know, 500 to 700 or more people's complete medical records every day for over 30 years, and these happened to be pretty close to the same years when we had health epidemics growing in our country, particularly obesity and diabetes and other diseases that came with them. So I kind of saw these epidemics, you know, firsthand in how they impacted people's lives over those decades. So in a sense, those three particular areas of my background came together as I tried to put this book together. My knowledge of psychology, my knowledge of the health and fitness practices, and my familiarity with disability and the impact of chronic disease.
What basically does the church teach us about the value of the human body? We're going to certainly explore that topic during the course of this program. And as you do that, tell us a little bit about the use of the acronym, the KISS, what you call the KISS principle.
Sure, sure. And I'll just say just in brief, yeah, the church has always taught, you know, we're beings of both body and soul. They're both important. We'll be reunited with glorified bodies after Christ comes in the second coming. So those of us who make it to heaven, we're going to be there, body and soul, even in heaven. So the church has always recognized this. And that KISS principle that I try to build this book around, you know, there's an acronym I say is not fully charitable in its original meaning of keep it simple, stupid. So I try to use instead keep it simple, Samson or Sarah, meaning that we're just trying to give lessons on maintaining our bodily temples to both men and women, but trying not to overcomplicate it in areas of exercise where that's fairly easily done, but also in areas of nutrition, which has been, you know, notoriously complex. We've been told such conflicting messages over decades that it kind of takes a lot to get to the nuts and bolts of things and trying to simplify that. But I make that attempt in this book too.
And so we are to be not only holy, but also healthy. And you hope to provide information and inspiration to shore up the temple that God gave to each of us so that we might be able to better glorify God in the body that he has also given to us. And you begin by, there you have four sections in your book. The first is preparing the ground for our temples, digging into disease, sin, and virtue. And you point out some of the pre-existing conditions that two-thirds of Americans are overweight. Why is obesity clearly serious business as it continues to grow by leaps and bounds?
Yes, when I was first writing this book, Father, we are still in the midst of a big pandemic. And one of the factors I found out during this time, going from like the Centers for Disease Control's own website, is that, you know, the people who were most likely to suffer seriously from the virus were, you know, older people who, you know, some of our body systems have started to slow down. We have a harder time fighting off disease, but also people of all ages and younger ages who had chronic health problems. And obesity itself was one of the most troublesome. For example, the CDC said obesity looked like it tripled the risk of hospitalization. And even in young people, even in children 18 and under, had over three times a greater chance of hospitalization and about a 1.5 times a greater chance of severe illness than young people who were not overweight. So obesity is one condition that sets us up to have ill effects if we get an acute condition like a virus. But also the data has shown that since I was born in 1961, the obesity rate within our country has more than tripled. So it's just really all of a sudden risen rapidly in the last 50 or 60 years. And with it come other health problems. And the one probably most directly related to it is diabetes mellitus, which has also skyrocketed during the last several decades.
And of course, you write, if untreated, diabetes can damage the blood vessels and virtually every body tissue they serve, including the heart, the eyes, the lower limbs, and even the brain.
Yes, that's right. And during my years of the disability evaluation, we saw lots of diabetes, lots of cases where it wasn't well controlled. And we saw the very, very unfortunate repercussions of what can go on there. During those same years, we saw vastly increasing the numbers of people whose disability was complicated by obesity. And we also saw not only more people with obesity, but the people who were obese, their BMIs, their body weights, their body fat percentages kept getting higher and higher. So it really is a serious business, one worth, looking into as individuals, and as a nation, to see what we can do to try to turn this trend around, because it is, a fairly recent trend. We were not this way throughout most of history.
Tell us a little bit about the deadly sin of laziness.
Yes. So sometimes, too, when people look at our obesity epidemic, they'll tie into the sins of, like, gluttony, overeating, and laziness, think we're just not exercising enough. So I say we have to be really careful if we look at gluttony and sloth as possible causes of obesity, because sometimes people do think of sloth purely as physical laziness. And I noted, I saw a History Channel special from some years back that covered the seven deadly sins. And their last episode on sloth, the last words were, if Christian tradition is to be believed, a simple act of laziness can send a person to hell. And I thought, boy, am I in trouble if that's all it takes,
Yes.
but of course, sloth, the church means it's more than that. It really means a spiritual sloth or akedia, a lack of care for the things of God. So a person could be very physically active. They could be an exercise fanatic, but they could have spiritual sloth, just not caring about the things of God. But the point I try to make is, it seems based on recent research that yes, many of us are having a hard time controlling what we eat. We're having a hard time exercising, but it may not be due to spiritual gluttony and sloth as much as the fact that the kinds of foods that comprise the majority of our diets today actually tend to stimulate hunger to make us more tired.
Let me read aside here to our first break. You write, gluttony's potential toward deadly sin comes from the fact that it removes our attention from God by focusing so much on what goes into our bellies. Also, many philosophers and theologians saw it as a gateway sin of sorts toward sins of lust by weakening our control of our bodily appetites. Welcome back to Amplify, where our guest is Dr. Kevin Vost. We're talking about his latest book, You Are That Temple, and that goes back to how we began our program, and we could go back to it throughout the entire program, where Jesus says, do you not know that you are God's temple, and that God's temple, and that God's spirit dwells in you? And then the principle, your temple is your body and soul are gifts from God, and are not your own. A price was paid for you in body and soul. And the fourth one, therefore, we should glorify God through our bodies. And Dr. Vost writes that the human body is more complex than any machine and operates not only according to the law of physics, but the laws of physiology.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
So it's not just a matter of calories. It's also a matter of hormones, isn't it, doctor? What is the role of hormones?
Yes, and this is something that various researchers and clinicians have been, you know, understanding more and more in recent decades, that hormones can play a very important role in how much body fat we hold. You know, for a long time, we were just told to lose weight, you just need to eat a little bit less and exercise a little bit more, and that it might not have mattered so much where those calories came from, because if a calorie is a calorie. Well, yeah, it is if you burn it in a machine, but the human machine operates differently. You know, we treat different kinds of foods in different ways. Some take more energy to burn than others, and they have great impacts on our hormones. And probably one of the clearest ways to see this, the impact of hormones, is if we look at adolescence. You know, as children go through adolescence, I mean, all of a sudden they're growing. You know, and in previous decades they were growing taller, more muscular. Now kids are growing obese more than they used to. But the growth hormones always played a role, you know, and it's not just that these teenagers are all of a sudden they're getting great big and tall because they're just eating like crazy. Well, they are eating like crazy, but the reason they're eating like crazy and getting so big and tall is because these hormonal surges with the growth hormone and testosterone mm-hmm. and estrogen in women. So it's, you know, it's hormonally caused. And we see, you know, there's various other ways we see hormones playing their role in the size of our body and how much fat we retain. And I'll tell you, there's an extreme example of this. There's a rare, thankfully rare disorder called lipodystrophy, where people, and it's I think four times more common in women, where in childhood they start losing all of the fat in their upper bodies only. And some of them over time will actually reach the level of obesity, but it's all below the waist. So it's as if they might have like the lower body of a sumo wrestler and the upper body of a marathon runner, which clearly shows how hormones regulate how much fat we store and where we store it. So for a person like that, it's obviously, you know, not that their lower bodies ate too much and their upper bodies didn't eat enough. You know, it's hormonal. But we do know many ways that our hormones impact how our body stores fat. And it appears that the most important one is the hormone of insulin, and that is a hormone that is just almost immediately and directly impacted by diet, and it's stimulated in the extreme by simple sugars in our diet.
We're getting into that part of the book that is of real interest to you, also the virtues of fitness, and here you quote Thomas Aquinas, who you read thoroughly. If a man uses exercise, food, and drink in moderation, he will become physically strong and his health will be improved and preserved. It is the same with the virtues of the soul. For instance, fortitude, temperance, and other virtues. What are some of those virtues? You select particularly four virtues. Tell us a little bit about each of them.
Sure, sure. And this is one thing I love about St. Thomas himself. You know, there he's explicitly talking about the importance of caring for the body and the soul and talking about parallels between health and fitness and virtue. And for those particular four, what have been called, you know, the cardinal virtues, four key fundamental moral virtues, the first one is fortitude. Some people will call it courage, you know, which is our capacity to overcome or endure difficulties to obtain worthwhile goals. So I say this is the guiding virtue we employ in physical strength training, which is literally overcoming heavy obstacles, and also cardiovascular or aerobic or endurance type training, which is literally enduring uncomfortable things to achieve the goal of bodily fitness. So if we're going to properly take care of our body through exercise, then fortitude, that virtue, comes into play. Temperance is our capacity to rein in our desires for bodily pleasures. So it's the guiding virtue regarding, you know, what we eat and how much we eat to maximize our health. We want to temper, rein, you know, show self-control over how we eat. Then the virtue of prudence or practical wisdom is a virtue that helps us craft realistic, practical regimens of eating and exercise that make sense for us as individuals, you know, with our unique bodies, preferences, and life commitment responsibilities, like weighing, what else do I have in my life? Can I actually exercise every day of the week, or can I do it only once or twice? You know, so prudence is where we're applying that practical wisdom to the care of our body. And then justice, the social virtue in which we give each other's their rightful due. And I try to employ that in this book by including special chapters that attempt to give the rightful due to the needs of particular groups of people. And namely, in this book, I focus on women and children, the elderly, and then also people with physical and mental disabilities. So the four cardinal virtues, fortitude, temperance, prudence, and justice, all have applications to the way we take care of our bodies.
So you point out that it's very important that we know what is truly good for our bodies, and you help us to do that in this book. Science can enlighten us, and as we get into section two, collecting quality building materials, proper nourishment of the bodies God gave us, the first fundamental principle is real food feeds, eat real food. What is real and what is not real?
Yeah, that's the thing. And I start this, if I could, with two brief quotes. One is from the Bible, and it says, and you take wheat and barley, beans and lentils, millet and spelt, and put them into a single vessel and make bread of them. And that's Ezekiel 4:9. And then I have a list. It says, enriched wheat flour, water, sugar, yeast, salt, soybean and or canola oil, defatted soy flour, wheat gluten, calcium propionate, sodium stearol 2 lactylate, sorbic acid, and vegetable monoglycerides. Yeah, that's an actual ingredient label from one of our common breads that we make today. So kind of a contrast I'm making here is what I'm calling the real foods are pretty much natural foods as God made them. Fruits and vegetables, you know, meats and dairy products that come from animals and plants as God made them, where foods that I would call, you know, fake foods tend to be those overly processed foods that are made in factories, you know, rather than farms, the kind of foods that have tables of ingredients or barcodes rather than being just foods themselves. And I argue that it's extremely important to differentiate them, because the current modern American diet during these decades when we became obese and diabetic started growing more and more towards those ultra-processed foods and away from the real foods.
And some foods were invented by God, you write, and not by man. And what foods were created by God and not by man?
Yeah, and here again, I mean things that would just grow in nature. You know, virtually, you know, I mean, we do some cultivation and some hybridization and things, but basically, you know, fruits and vegetables and the various animals that we eat and eggs, you know, and fish, some natural grains, just the things that grow in the earth or that roam about the earth, you know, back from the days of Cain and Abel when we had our, you know, farmer and shepherd. So basically, these would be foods, too, in our modern times. We could say, people said, these are the foods that are usually on the outer aisles of your grocery store. you know, the produce, the butcher area, the dairy. Whereas the vast majority of our grocery stores now, the vast majority of all those inner aisles are the manufactured, packaged, man-made foods that didn't exist, you know, 100 or 2 years ago.
And some people argue, as you point out in your book, that food labels should tell us not only what is in a processed food product, but what they have done to the food.
Yes, that's right, because so often when foods are made, for example, typical modern bread will say it's enriched flour will be the term. But they say that because the milling process itself strips the bran, strips fiber, strips a variety of nutrients, the B vitamins, out of the flour, and then it's added back in artificially. Whereas, you know, our simpler, our earlier, more basic breads, like the recipe in Ezekiel, you don't use enriched flour because you've not stripped the nutrients out of it in the first place. You know, so it's as God made it, as we find it in nature. And research has shown that, like for children and adolescents now in the United States, I remember some data that showed by 1999, 61% of what kids ate in the U.S. was this ultra-processed food rather than just basic natural foods. And by 2018, it had risen even higher to 67%. So kids today are eating 2 out of 3 food items they eat in a day are these processed foods rather than the natural real foods that their great-grandparents would have eaten almost exclusively.
Now, give us some examples of processed food and ultra-processed foods, because you point out that all processed food is not bad, but what is done to processed foods.
Yes, yes. And, you know, some processed foods, of course, can be good. Different kinds of food handling. You know, even going back, you know, thousands of years, you know, when people would use salt, would cook. I mean, so it is, not all processing is bad. There can be real uses for it. But the problem is, the extreme problem is, when the processed food just doesn't alter natural foods, but is almost completely devoid of them. And it's somewhere in the chapter I give an example, extreme example. I say if you have a hankering for an orangey deliciousness, at one end of the continuum is the orange, you know, an orange, an ingredient is an orange. And then another end of the continuum, I talked about a powdered tangy space-age drink that I drank as a kid. And here were the ingredients for this orange drink: sugar, fructose, citric acid, maltodextrin, calcium phosphate, sodium. And
yes.
It goes on. There's about 6 or 7 more of those, you know. So there's the extreme where you want some orange flavor, you could have an orange, which is full of nutrients,
right,
and a limited amount of sugar, or you could have this virtually completely man-made chemical concoction that has no nutritional value except for some artificial vitamin C that they've added to it.
But they argue that they're giving us what we want.
Yes. And there's been a lot of study, you know, on what's done in the food industry. And oftentimes the manufacturers say, well, they are giving us what we want because this is what we buy. And that's true. But then we have to ask, you know, but to what extent, though, do we desire what we desire because we've grown accustomed to this kind of food? And I cite some other books and sources within my book that have really examined this deeply, and they point out that modern, you know, food processors have teams of experts, psychologists, marketing people, that engineer these foods to make them maximally tasty to us and to make us want to eat more and more and more. So they focus on things they call the bliss point, which is the exact right amount of sugar. They'll do all kinds of testing with kids and adults, find the right amount of sugar to trigger our bliss point. And then they'll put that sugar in foods you might not even realize it's in there, you know, in spaghetti sauces, barbecue sauces, breads, because they know it'll encourage us to eat it. There's something they call the mouth feel. We want foods that melt in our mouth. And they find that fat is the best at that, so they'll put a lot of fat in our foods. Another thing they call is a flavor burst. For some foods, we want something to, you know, the minute we put them in our mouth, we get this sensation. And salt is the primary sources for that flavor burst. So one of these books I cite is called Salt, Fat, sugar. And those are the three main things that manufacturers put in our foods that make us crave them more and more. And because they're less nutrient dense, you know, they've had some of the actual nutrients stripped out of these foods, we tend to want more and more of them to satisfy our cravings.
And some of the things you write that I've underlined, God gave us minds and he expects us to use them. I certainly do not want to oversimplify things and say that all processed food is bad and cannot be eaten at all, though most of them are very shady characters. Most ultra-processed food tend to remove fiber, which can produce a sense of fullness and natural nutrients, and then add ingredients, the most inexpensive ones possible, that enhance flavor and extend shelf life. Another major way of unprocessed foods foul our bodily temples, and I need to keep bringing that up so we're not just talking about healthier, we're really talking about our spiritual life also. Foods foul our bodily temples is that because they are typically so low in essential nutrients, we may be driven to consume more and more of them to satisfy our nutritional needs, thus making us fatter and sicker. I'm wondering if we're reaching a point where we don't even know what the real foods are anymore.
That's a good point. I mean, as the surveys go, each year as the time goes by, a higher and higher percentage of our food is these ultra-processed foods. And you've probably seen it too, Father. I'm sure most of the listeners have. A new tendency now too is I'm constantly seeing commercials for new ultra-processed imitations of real foods that they might try to imitate eggs or meat, you know, but they're made with all these man-made chemicals to try to simulate real foods and move us away from those real foods themselves. And I think it's a shame because, you know, we know that, you know, God made our bodies as wonderful things, wonderful gifts. And throughout most of our human history, obesity and diabetes has not really been a plague when we've also kind of eaten the food that we were naturally adapted to eat, be it animal food or plant food. But it's just really in recent times where we've overprocessed that we've led to such rising obesity, diabetes, and other illnesses.
So to repeat once again, the issue we need to continue to going back to, what kind of real foods then should we eat?
Yes. Yeah. And there, I do have several chapters focusing on the kinds, but again, they're basically going to be foods that give us adequate protein, fat, vitamins, and minerals. The carbohydrates are another food source, and I argue in there reasons to think that we may have been led down a wrong path in arguing that we have a higher percentage of carbohydrates in our diets than most of us used to. But mainly, again, these are going to be foods that, again, are along the outer aisles of the grocery stores, fruits and vegetables, meat, eggs, fish, cheese, butter, things like that, as opposed to, you know, the frozen dinners, the boxed cookies, and various desserts and snack foods and chips. So people, you know, tend to develop strong addictions to some of these boxed foods. But people who do switch more back to the natural, more nourishing foods tend to find that those addictions fade away because the real foods are more satisfying. They give us more nutrients, that they fill us. Once we can move back towards those, we tend to find those cravings for both for eating processed foods and for having to eat so often tend to decrease.
And so we need to be attentive to the fact that there are the virtues we're talking about promote physical, mental, and spiritual health. And so that's why it's so important for us to know what is truly good for our bodies. And we believe that science can enlighten us. And the book, I need to point out, has a number of fundamental principles. At the end of each section, each chapter, there is a temple-tending tenet. And the particular one here, I'm going to read us up to our break, is that carbohydrates are not to be placed on a pedestal, nor are they to be trampled underfoot, nor are they an essential macronutrient. Different people can tolerate different levels of carbohydrate in their diet, and we would all do well to determine how much works best for us.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.